You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're going to start this because we're live as of a few seconds ago. Joining me is Big E, one-third of the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. We've got a lot of requests for some... We've been rotating our co-hosts. We get a lot of our guests from MMAFighting.com, Pizza Carol, Alexander Kaylee, Danny Segura, and all that. We had Uriah Faber on. But I noticed a few... I think it was a couple months ago, Big E, you posted some of the podcasts you listened to, and the A-side was on it. So I naturally had to reach out to WWE to see if you would want to be on it. So... welcome, and hope you have fun on your A-side debut.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It's a pleasure. Thank you for putting out a killer podcast for me.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to do my thing. But as you know, I don't set the questions. The questions come in from the fans, whether it has to do with MMA or sometimes we talk about whatever they want to talk about. But I've gone through them. I don't know if you've gone through them. We've had a myriad of questions specifically for you. Some people, I think, it's refreshing to hear non-MMA journalists speak about MMA or fighters speak about MMA. They want to hear the fans speak about MMA. But before we get into that, you're a big fan. We were talking before you called in. Where did this love for MMA start with?
Well, I guess, like, I was, you know, in college in the mid-2000s. We all, like, in the dorm, watched The Ultimate Fighter. And, like, that was kind of, as a casual fan... And I almost, like, hate to admit this, but my love the last, like, 3-4 years has really been reinvigorated because of the video game. So we started playing U2 in the locker room, and it was, like, that was the thing. There'd be, like half the locker room is playing this game on a daily basis. And that really got me to start watching UFC regularly. And then I realized, like, I love college football, too, but, like, right next to college football now, is my love for MMA. So I got ESPN Plus because of all the UFC cards. I'm listening to like 3 or 4 different MMA podcasts, including yours, so thank you for that. But it's incredible, and I have such a great respect for the fighters and what they do and their mentality. And I've also like run across it. There's also this cool parallel between pro wrestlers and fighters. There's so many fighters who are pro wrestling fans, and so many of us in the locker room, so many pro wrestlers, who are really into MMA. So honestly, like, one of my favorite things to do is to come back on Tuesdays. Jack Gallagher, one of the cruiserweights, is a big MMA fan. Is I see him and we'll talk about the past card. It's like a UFC card every week now.
Yeah.
So there's so many of us. Like that's the thing in the locker room, is to talk about cards and kind of match up. So we geek about the like, kind of fantasy book too. And so yeah, there's so many of us who are big MMA fans in the locker room.
Well, I actually ran into Jack Gallagher at a Bellator event. I think it was the Pitbull Michael Chandler one when Michael Venom Page got knocked out by Douglas Lima. He was there, and I ran into him, and he did MMA, didn't he? Is that right?
He did. He's had a few fights, and I don't want to spoil anything, but I feel like he's possibly maybe looking into doing both what we do, WWE, and also fighting, which I think would be really cool. But I think that's all up in the air. But yeah, man, he's definitely had some fights in the past. And I think he trains in Orlando, I think at the same gym as Felicia Spencer.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah, because that same card, your former coworker Jack Swagger fought on that MVP.
Yeah, yeah. That's one reason I ended up, we were on the road at the time, but I remember a bunch of us were all huddled around a computer and really just pumped to see him do his thing. But yeah, we're all rooting for him too. And we all like, we know... He was an All-American at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And when you're in the ring with someone, you can tell, like, oh, you're legitimately strong. And I always thought, like, he's a guy who would do well just with his amateur background.
And well, we've got a lot of questions about Jack, and we've gotten a few questions about some other MMA fighters that most recently got into the ring, not in your promotion, but in another promotion. And then another guy has a big up-and-coming fight against a UFC Hall of Famer in another promotion. I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about that, but the questions are coming in rapidly, so we're going to dive right in. All right, so first question, we're also on Reddit, so if you have any questions on Reddit. All right, Big E, specifically for you, if everything he owned was on the line, who would you choose to fight alongside you against Francis Ngannou in an MMA fight?
Oh, God. I want no parts of that. Can they be a fictional character like the Juggernaut? I need someone massive.
I mean, you could. It also says, who would you choose on the current WWE roster to fight alongside you?
I guess Brock. Brock is the most. I mean, that's kind of the obvious answer.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. All the comments are like, "Oh, he's just gonna say Brock."
Yeah, but that feels cheap. Also, I guess Bobby Lashley is trained as well.
Yeah,
and he's also a massive human being. I think he's trained at ATT for a while.
I think he's still. He might still be there. I know he did some other stuff in another promotion, but he's. He has a lot of legitimate wins under the Bellator banner for sure.
Right. So the Brock one feels cheap. I'll go with Bobby.
Bobby?
Yeah, but I want no parts of Francis, man. It's crazy to see him. It feels like he's knocking guys out with these glancing blows, just and like top level guys, top five guys in under a minute. So it's been cool to see his resurgence since the Derek Lewis fight. He's been on a roll the last three fights.
Well, I was going to ask you about that question specifically because I think it was a couple years ago you brought up Derek Lewis. Someone asked you, would you do MMA? And you were like, I don't want to get punched by Derek Lewis. And then I think the very next fight, he had that fight against Francis Ngannou. Watching that, what was going through your mind when you're watching, like you said, Francis Ngannou, like on record being the hardest hitter in UFC history, possibly human history, against Derek Lewis, and it goes to a three-round snooze fest?
I was shocked, man. I actually listened to Rogan was talking. I listened to Rogan talk about the fight before the fight, but I listened to it afterwards. And it's funny to go back and hear how much anticipation there was. And we were all like, "This is the fight. This is going to be a slugfest." And in retrospect, to listen to those comments, and I remember being in the locker room. I think I had probably a conversation with Jack about the same thing. Like, this is going to be a barn burner, and to see two guys do nothing was pretty mind-blowing. So I couldn't believe that one. But obviously, you know, like Francis talked about the fear after the Stipe fight, and Derek obviously with the issues with his back. But it's been really cool to see, you know, Francis kind of bounce back from that, because I was worried that it would be the beginning of the end for him. But man, the Blades fight, the Kane fight, the JDS fight looked incredible.
And what do you so? And then Derek Lewis actually has his next fight booked at UFC 244, Madison Square Garden. He's going to be fighting Blagoy Ivanov. So the last time he fought at Madison Square Garden is when he lost to Daniel Cormier, though. Who's a big fan of your product. I hope he might be watching. But what do you think about Derek's shot against Blagoy Ivanov, former World Series of Fighting heavyweight champion?
Right. I honestly haven't seen a ton of his stuff. It's hard to root against Derek Lewis.
Right.
I remember I've seen a couple of Blagoy. I think the couple UFC fights he's had. It'd be nice to see Derek Lewis bounce back. And DC, I actually met at Staples Center. He comes to shows. He's a huge wrestling nerd. Such like the nicest guy. And he's another guy that's very easy to root for.
So, and he has a big fight. We have a couple questions, obviously, about that. But he has a big fight coming up with Stipe Miocic. The people want him to fight for the winner of that fight, Francis Ngannou. But you have the John Jones trilogy out there. If Stipe does win, there's a possibility of a trilogy with Stipe Miocic, another big heavyweight trilogy. If, as a fan, do you like the idea of a third John Jones Daniel Cormier fight, whether it's at heavyweight or light heavyweight? John Jones is technically 1-0-1 because that second fight's no contest. Daniel Cormier would have to drop back down to light heavyweight, which he hasn't done in a while. He is the heavyweight champion. Should John Jones go up to light heavyweight, claim another belt, or would you like to see them run it back at the light heavyweight?
Man, I'm really on the fence because I don't know why DC at now, he's 40 now, mm-hmm. I don't know why he want to make that cut again. It seemed like a really difficult cut. He seems a lot happier, and the power he has at heavyweight is incredible. I think he's still undefeated at heavyweight, right?
Correct. He's never the only person he's ever lost to ever is John Jones.
It's John Jones, right. But in the same vein, I also want to see Francis get a shot too, depending on what happens with Stipe and DC. And there's so many different options, man. I wonder if, because apparently Bones doesn't have a hard time making the cuts.
Not at all.
I don't know how much does it do him any service to move up to heavyweight. There's so many different options. I'm really on the fence with that. I guess ideally, I think seeing Bones and DC at heavyweight is just new. And for the trilogy, the fact that they've never done it at heavyweight. I mean, that's a big fight. It's huge.
So if that fight does go down and it is at heavyweight, a lot of people consider now Daniel Cormier the pound for pound best. Some people consider him the greatest heavyweight ever because he is undefeated. There is a question over, and I know our comment section hates these conversations, but because you're new, so we have to ask you. It seems to come down to who the greatest fighter of all time. There's usually like a top five. John Jones is up there, George St. Pierre, Demetrius Johnson, these guys. if John goes up and beats Daniel Cormier at heavyweight, is that enough to just cement him as the greatest fighter who ever lived? Because to me, in my mind, I think right now it's George. He's avenged both his losses. He has two belts, and he's done everything. And he wants to fight Khabib as for a legacy fight. I'll just fight him for I don't need the belt. I'll just fight him because I want to. If John beats Daniel Cormier at heavyweight, is he the greatest fighter of all time?
Oh, man. I'd say based on resume alone, I want to say yes. But then you have the asterisk with the PED stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, George's on record with, you know, George is such a clean guy, like, across the board and so respected. And, like, he never had any of those hiccups. It's, man, and I hate these debates. Usually I like listening to them. I hate contributing to them, whether it's hip-hop, say, enjoy, because it's so subjective. There's different eras. Man, if he beats DC a third time, that would be hard to argue against.
I couldn't agree with you anymore, but we just had a question come in, not related to John Jones or Daniel Cormier. What's your prediction for how Tito Ortiz versus Alberto Del Rio will play out in Combate Americas?
We were actually, I was talking to maybe Jamie Noble about this yesterday, and he's another MMA guy who works as a producer with us now. It's so such an off the wall. Like, I just did not expect this, and then it was announced. Man, it's I'm intrigued. I'll say that. I also don't want to be in a position where I'm like, you know, talking about a former coworker in a negative light. It's hard. I'd have trouble picking against Tito if being forced. I wish, you know, both Alberto the best, but it's a real zany fight. I don't know what to make of it.
It is zany, but Alberto does have MMA record, right. A past. Like, he fought Mirko Krokop. He got head kicked by Mirko Krokop.
Oh, yeah. We're all quite, well aware of that. In a hood, too. Of all things.
In a hood.
In his prime. You want to have, you know, your whole, like, peripheral of it. You want to, you know, being under a hood for that is nuts. But, yeah, you're right. And I think he's wrestled on the Mexican national team.
I think he, as well. I think, and I might not be 100%, I think he actually made the Mexican wrestling team for the 2000 Olympics, but they didn't make the Olympics, so he didn't compete at the actual games. But he does have history. Me personally, it's like you said, it's a zany fight. I don't really like the rhetoric going on between them. I don't know if you've been following it on social media, but it's very much got very political. Based on Tito Ortiz's beliefs and Alberto being of Hispanic background. Not a big fan of that, but that's just my personal take. But it's, you saw what Colby Covington, we were talking before, Colby Covington, you saw how he's doing. He's got a title fight soon, and I don't want to say he talks himself into that fight, but he's now one of the must-see fighters on the UFC roster.
Yeah, well, it was crazy to hear that. I think he was close to being cut. He had like a 5-fight win streak and had no buzz whatsoever.
Yeah,
and then he started doing this gimmick, which is clearly inspired, you know, from our industry, from pro wrestling.
Yeah,
and a lot of people, like, it's clear to me that it's shtick. Like, you get that it's a gimmick, but it's put him in a position, and he's backed it up. Like the RDA fight, to see the amount of pressure he was able to put on RDA, and then do the same thing with Robbie. I couldn't, like, the pace is insane to me. I doing that for 25 minutes, where you're setting a record for strikes thrown. And also attempting almost 20 takedowns is incredible. So he's also backed it up as well. But yeah, man, it's really I'm on the fence with that stuff too, because I get selling fights. I get you want to bring eyes to stuff. But some of the stuff just becomes real vitriolic, especially with like Khabib and Conor, where you're talking about religion and families. And it gets to where's the line?
Right. Well, I think Colby, too, he knows he's playing a part. And I've seen him outside interacting with the fans, and to his credit, he lives his character. Like, you see him on the streets of Las Vegas during fights. He's wearing his red hat. He's walking around. He walks around Las Vegas with his belt still. Someone comes up to take a picture of him. He's all smiles, but he lives his gimmick, if that's what you want to call it. And he's got himself a title. Not an easy fight against Kamaru Usman. A lot of people think they're a very similar style matchup, but I think this is a perfect segue because we actually have a question on the MMA fighting site. It says, from our friend Lucian, first of all, don't either of you dare be sour on this finest of Wednesdays. Before anything else, just wanted to write that I'm a big fan of the New Day, and what the three of you have done have given me a lot of entertainment, both with promos and matches over the years. So sincere thanks for your work, and may the power of positivity continue to shine on all of us in the years to come. But now to the question. After Covington's superb performance last week, and it feels like a given that the next welterweight championship match will be Usman versus Covington. So I was curious, after seeing such great fights from both of them, who do you favor in that match and why? Also considering what we saw from Covington from the promo side on Saturday, how much are you dreading the seemingly inevitable ugly build for that fight? And I think what you were saying is a perfect segue. I don't know if you've watched the post-fight interaction. So
yeah, sometimes I got other things to do, so like I watch the post fight and sometimes. But as soon as Colby won that, I knew Kamaru was on the desk as well.
Yep.
I flipped straight over to ESPN Plus and made sure to watch the post fight. And it was disappointing because it's just a lot of they talked over each other a lot. It was, I don't know. I think it could get ugly in a way that's not entertaining, which is mudslinging, and I don't know. So. As far as a favorite, man, their styles are so similar. That grinding, we're on you, wrestling, pay. It's really hard. It feels almost like a coin flip. Personally, I don't want to see Colby be the undisputed. Just sure. Suppose he's going to cut all the Trump stuff. I just don't want to see that happen. But I can't take away anything from him as a fighter, as an athlete. It's a fight that I think a lot of people really anticipate. It feels like a coin flip for me, honestly.
I agree. And in those type of fights, I tend to favor the champion, especially because I think, in my mind, Kamaru Usman's win over Tyron Woodley was more impressive than Colby's win over Robbie. Not because Colby's wasn't impressive, but Tyron was the champion, and he was coming off that stunning KO over Darren Till. And I think that whole week, I don't know anyone that picked Kamaru Usman to win. I think there were a lot of people that picked Colby, but I don't think, and if you did pick Kamaru, I don't think you picked him to dominate Tyron Woodley. So
exactly.
I don't know if you watched that fight. What did you pick Tyron Woodley going into that fight?
Oh, of course I picked Woodley. I thought like the conventional wisdom was that his wrestling would negate Kamaru's, and I thought he was clearly a better striker. Kamaru, I don't think, has a ton of knockout wins, and I thought Woodley would be able to touch him enough to hurt him and be able to take away the wrestling, and that was not at all the case. I was like watching the entire thing wide-eyed because I couldn't believe it. And I kept waiting for Tyron to, okay, here's Tyron of old. And no, he was just able to grind him for 25 minutes. And it was supremely impressive, but I did not expect that at all.
Yeah, and Kamaru does come from that wrestling background, him and Ben Askren, who's, again, taken pages out of your world quite a bit. He actually took to Twitter and apologized for losing to Jorge Masvidal because he's like, I want to apologize because I lost, the world has to watch Colby Covington and Kamaru Usman go back and forth. So fair play to Ben, but Kamaru Usman trains with Henry Hoof, trains with Tyron Spong, so he's training with elite level strikers to get on. He'll admit he's not on their level, obviously, but if he can mix that type of striking with wrestling, I tend to favor Kamaru over Colby Covington, and that'll probably happen in Madison Square Garden too.
Yeah, yeah. I think it makes sense, too. And it seems like Kamaru's made some real leaps and bounds with the striking as well. And Colby's pace is incredible, but you also really didn't see him throw anything with any, like, fight-ending intention. It's a lot of just touching Robbie. So, I think his only path to winning is a decision. And, I don't know if Kamaru can knock him out either. But, I think you're right. If I had to give someone an edge, I'd probably give it to Kamaru.
And this isn't a question, but it seemed to be after that Jorge Masvidal, that 5-second knockout, which I'm sure we'll talk about on this. When he knocked out Ben Askren, he was calling for a title shot. It seemed like because it was so fresh, everyone just goes, like, you set the record for fastest knockout. You should probably get a title shot. But we had to wait. But then after that, we had to wait and see what happened between Lawler and Covington. Now that Covington won that dominantly, and it seems it's very obvious that's the next fight. Most likely at Madison Square Garden. If you're Jorge Masvidal, do you fight Leon Edwards, who he got into that backstage scuffle with when he did that three-piece in Minnesota? Is that the next fight for those two? Maybe on the same card.
Yeah, I feel like it sounds like that's not a fight that Jorge wants right now.
Nope.
It's like I think he's even talked about getting the title fight next or waiting until the winner of Colby and Kamaru. But man, it's just feels like it's kind of written in the stars, you know, with their interaction, the three-piece in Minnesota. Like, it's the story's all there. And Leon looked incredible in his last outing, man. He's one of those guys, too, I think, because he's fought so much in the UK. A lot of times on cards that they're not pay-per-views. A lot of people aren't really paying attention to. And he's looked incredible for a while now against Cowboy, against RDA. He's put on these really sharp performances. To watch him, I couldn't believe the fact that he decided to grapple with Gunnar. And I'm just like, what are you doing? And he like out-grappled Gunnar. Like, I did not expect that. So to see a guy who's that well-rounded, who's that sharp in his striking, his wrestling, his jiu-jitsu, man, if I'm Jorge, I don't think that fight does a lot for him as far as moving up the ladder. But it's a fight I really want to see, and it's a dangerous fight for him as well.
It's 100% dangerous fight. And Stephen Thompson actually said the exact thing you said. We spoke to him at UFC 240. He goes, I think Leon Edwards, because I think he's on an 8-fight win streak. And his last loss, I think, was to Kamaru. And that was like maybe his first or second fight in the UFC. They were both very young. I think he's been on a tear since. But he said, I think Leon's biggest detriment is U.S. fans just don't know who he is. Like, he's putting on these great performances. He speaks well. He beat Cowboy in Singapore. I think that Singapore card kind of hurt him, too, because that was like 3 in the morning our time. So not a lot of people didn't get – a lot of people didn't get to see it. But a 3-round fight as opposed to a 5-round fight, I think favors Jorge Masvidal. If it was a 5-round and Leon could wear him out, I would slightly favor Leon. But I think Jorge Masvidal is calling for that Conor McGregor fight, too. So Jorge versus Conor, I'd be all about. He also wants to fight Nick and Nate Diaz, so he's looking for these big money fights, but title shot for him first.
Yeah, no, and rightfully so too. You know, he's really put himself in a position with the Till knockout and with the Ben Askren knockout, where he's you know, such a hot name right now. So like, I might as well cash. If he can't get that title fight, I think it's time to cash in for him. And I don't know, the Leon Edwards fight for us, like, MMA nerds, feels big, but I don't know. You know, it's not a – I don't think it's a money fight.
It's for sure not a money fight. But the welterweight division is so – and Stephen Thompson's coming back. He wants to fight Rafael Dos Anjos on that Madison Square Garden card too. Robbie Lawler's out there. Ben Askren supposedly fighting Damian Maia in this big grappler versus grappler match if Damian Maia wants to continue fighting. But the welterweight division is – and we haven't even talked about Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis is at welterweight. Like, if whoever wins that, they can throw their names into the title shot because they're both so popular. Anthony Pettis knocked out Stephen Thompson. What do you make of Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis, though, UFC 241? Nate hasn't fought since his second Conor McGregor fight at UFC 202 back in, I think, August 2016. So he hasn't fought him in 3 years, and now he's coming back.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement for that, to see how sharp he'll be. Also, I really like this new, like, Pettis, his resurgence, where I think his last, like, 3 fights announced, I just did not expect at all. Like, yep. The Stephen Thompson fight, like, that seems odd. But he looked great there. So I just kind of like him taking on these big challenges out of nowhere and moving up to 170. So I'm really intrigued, man. It's just one of those, like, you just want to see what happens because I have no idea. I don't know how sharp Diaz would be after the layoff. And I'm really excited about seeing that matchup.
And historically, I think Nate's obviously his best weight class is lightweight. This is when he fought, but he hasn't fought a lightweight in a while. His last 2 fights were a welterweight. He was supposed to fight Dustin Poirier at UFC 230, the last Madison Square Garden card before that fell off. That was going to be a lightweight, but he's lost to a lot of good names at welterweight, but he's also beaten a lot of good names at lightweight. So I'm a little surprised this is at welterweight. I just don't think he wants to cut that weight anymore, which is fair play to him. I don't like to see anyone cut that much weight before they're fighting to hydrate their body, but... Moving on, Johnny Walker versus Corey Anderson. How do you guys see this playing out? If Walker wins, how many more wins to a title shot? If Anderson wins, will he get overlooked for a title shot again? So I don't know if you saw, but Johnny Walker's obviously been making big waves in the UFC, knocking out everyone and celebrating and all that stuff. Corey Anderson has been in the UFC for a very long time, former Ultimate Fighter winner. Dana kind of put him on blast after that UFC 240, at the UFC 240 press conference. Because Corey's been calling for a title fight, and he said Corey Anderson has turned down 50 fights. There's no way he's fighting for the title. And within a week, he's fighting Johnny Walker, which I think is one of the most dangerous fights he could take. What do you think about Johnny Walker's rise, Corey Anderson, Corey Anderson's chances against what he calls, he said, I wanted to dethrone the king. The UFC wants me to halt to train. Those are his words, not mine. What do you think of this fight?
Uh, I agree with you. I think it's a very dangerous fight for Corey Anderson. I worry for him, honestly. Just because Johnny Walker is so explosive. He talks to him about not being able to show everything he can do. So, like, he hasn't really had to demonstrate that he can stop a takedown. I think Corey's problem will always be he's not going to put on the most exciting fights. You know, he's a wrestler who's just going to grind you and wear you down. With some solid boxing, but nothing that really jumps off the page. And I think Johnny Walker is so exciting. He's such an interesting personality that with the performances he's had lined up, as long as he stays away from any other shoulder injuries due to dancing, I think he'll be on pace to have a title fight within the next year or so. It's just the dancing that he's got to watch out for, which honestly, in my line of work too, the dancing is often what gets you. So he's got to be careful there.
Well, I think he has that it factor. I remember when we saw Israel Adesanya's UFC debut, he just has that charismatic, flashy style. And Johnny Walker also is very adamant that he wants to learn English so he can connect with the U.S. market. John Jones isn't quite impressed yet. We spoke him at UFC 239. I think Johnny Walker's 6'5". I think he's as tall as Alexander Gustafsson. So that's looking at them, they match up great. But John Jones wants that. I want to see him fight in elite level competition, because his words were, if I fought these guys, I would be doing the same thing. I just fought Thiago Santos for 5 rounds. Let's see what Johnny Walker can do against Thiago Santos for 5 rounds. But Corey Anderson has lost violently to Jimmy Manoa and Ovince St. Preux. So to me, you favor Corey Anderson. He has 2 wins over former top five fighters at the time. He beat Glover Teixeira, who's in the top five, and he beat Ilia Laatifi in the top five. But he also got, he went to sleep against Ovince St. Preux and Jimmy Manoa. And so it's a tough fight. I'll slightly favor Corey Anderson, especially in the 3-round fight, though.
Yeah. My thing, though, even if Corey gets a pretty solid win, I don't know. It's obviously going to depend on how his performance looks, but I just don't know if he's going to be able to generate enough buzz to get the next title fight. And then again too, it kind of depends too on what Bones decides to do if he does take the DC fight. But yeah, and honestly, I know the Anthony Smith fight wasn't that long ago, but he's looked really good as well. And I don't know where he's at now, but I think he's got to be top three. I don't know what his next fight is, but I think he's gonna have trouble getting that Bones fight again soon. But I think he's going to be a hard guy for any of the contenders to get through.
Well, I think Anthony Smith has just had surgery, so he was out for a little while. I know if Luke Rockhold had won, they wanted to fight for. They hate each other. They've been on the MMA Hour, our old show, many a times, just throwing heat at one another. And Anthony Smith said, "I'll fight Luke Rockhold tomorrow in a parking lot." Like, so he doesn't care. But we also have people aren't talking about is Chris Weidman's coming up to light heavyweight and fighting Dominic Reyes, who's also one of these young up-and-coming light heavyweights. You have Alexander Rachik, who just sent Jimmy Manoa into retirement. So there was a point in time, I remember, where light heavyweights seemed to be very shallow, where you had all these 30 to 40-year-olds kind of dominating, the Shoguns, the Gustafsons, all these guys. Now, all of a sudden, there's this massive influx of youth. So I agree with you. Corey Anderson, if he wins impressively, should probably get the title fight. He did confront John Jones at an autograph signing. So he's trying to generate buzz, but I don't know if he can pull off a decision. But then, say Dominic Reyes head kicks Chris Weidman at Boston, I don't know how that's going to play out.
Right, right. Or if Weidman jumps the line too with a solid win, that's very possible as well.
100%. They always wanted to fight for that quote unquote King of New York. What do you think of that fight between Weidman and Reyes? It is a 5-round main event in Boston.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't know if Reyes won the Ozdemir fight.
I agree 100%.
And I was kind of underwhelmed. And obviously, Ozdemir is not an easy out. I just haven't been – he's been on a great – I think he's strung a lot of wins together. But I haven't really been overly impressed with Reyes' run. But, I guess based on where he's ranked and merit, if he gets another win here over a name like Weidman, that maybe he deserves the next shot. I don't know. And then who knows how Weidman reacts moving up to 205 as well. So that's an intriguing one as well, just to see that. So I really have no idea where that one goes. Weidman's been out for a while. I can't remember
UFC 230 when he lost to Jacare, when he was winning that whole fight and then Jacare knocked him out right at the end.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, I'm intrigued. I don't know.
I have to favor Reyes. He's a big guy. I don't know if you've ever seen him around other people, but he's a He's a very large human, and Chris Weidman's big too, but he's not the biggest for light heavyweight. I mean, you saw what happened to Luke Rockhold when he moved up to light heavyweight. So for every Anthony Smith and Thiago Santos we get a Luke Rockhold who broke his jaw against Jan Blachowicz.
Exactly. And I think Ray has also played college football. Yeah. Stony Brook or something.
Something like that.
Yeah. So put together.
He's hyper-athletic. But we're going to move on from a longtime listener and commenter, Eduardo Bueno. Hey, guys, can you rate Cain Velasquez's pro wrestling debut last weekend? I'm not much into pro wrestling for me, but it's hard to judge. But to me, he looks sensational. Also, can he become a superstar in the Mexican market? How far can he go? Cheers. So, yes, Big E, I don't know if you saw, but former UFC heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez dipped his toe into your world down in AAA. He teamed with Cody Rhodes and Psycho Clown. I thought he looked pretty good for someone who's never wrestled before, but I don't know if what you thought as someone who lives in this world.
So I saw the first few minutes of the match, and I was floored. I was wow. I expected, because you know Kane is a wrestler, I expected some impressive suplexes. I thought they'd string him along slowly, but to see him doing lucha spots and running Ranas was incredible. So I was really impressed with what I saw. I know a year or two ago, I think during his hiatus, he went down to the Performance Center and trained a little bit, and I heard he was a natural. And like so many of those elite wrestlers just pick up, and grapplers too, like Ronda with her judo background, just pick up what we do very easily. And I'm excited to see what Kane does. So it was really cool to see his performance at Triple Mania. I think really impressed me. That's another thing we talked about yesterday when I was at work. I was thoroughly impressed, and I think if he wants to, I don't know how much longer he wants to fight, or how much he wants to, you know, make pro wrestling a living, or even if it's just a hobby. But I think he seems to have caught on very quickly, and I think he'll do very well if he wants to.
I agree. I was looking back at all the professional, like these athletes that have transitioned in, like recently in my mind, him, Ronda, D'Angelo Williams was very impressive when he made his professional wrestling debut. So those three blew me away. Kurt Angle obviously is, I think, the one that everyone points to, but I hope he doesn't leave MMA entirely, because there's a lot of fights I just personally as a fan want to see him fight. I would be very disappointed if we never got to see Cain versus Stipe. I think to me, that's Cain fought Francis in the first UFC on ESPN card. That was actually here in Arizona. Me and my former coworker, Sean Alshadi, said, this feels like it should have been Cain versus Stipe. Stipe had just lost to Daniel Cormier. Cain Velasquez is his teammate. He probably wasn't going to get the title shot next. Now he obviously has, like, hindsight, but we thought it should have been Cain Stipe. Are you in that boat? Are there fights that you want to see Cain take, or has he done enough to cement himself in the minds of the UFC fans?
I guess I often think now, especially as I get older, I think as a performer or as an athlete, I'd like to see him do whatever he wants.
Sure.
On his way, makes him happy. I think of that side. As a fan, though, I'd love to see him fight again, especially because it felt like, I don't know if we got robbed is the right way to put it, but it felt like with the Francis fight and we didn't know if his knee buckled or, you know, it was just the way everything turned out was kind of murky. It didn't seem like a proper return, and I would love to see him. I think I love the Stipe fight. If Stipe doesn't get past DC, I'd love to see that fight, because it seems, you know, they're heavyweights who are kind of out of the mold of what you expect a heavyweight to be, as far as cardio and boxing, and they could kind of do it all. So I think that's a tremendous fight. But also, like, you know, he's been fighting for a while, and if it makes him happy to do, you know, Triple Mania and do Triple A shows and do something a little different, I think that's cool as well. So I'm just kind of torn. I think of it as a fan, and I think of it as a performer as well, and kind of, you know, what fulfills you. So I think of both sides.
I think for a long time, people kind of pointed to him as the greatest heavyweight ever. In my mind, he kind of leapfrogged Fedor with that trilogy against Junior Dos Santos, where he famously knocked Junior out at the end. And he looked great, but then we just lost him for a long time. He lost to Verdum. He threw a spinning wheel kick against Travis Brown at UFC 200. That caught everyone off guard. And then Fedor returned in that Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix and made it all the way to the finals before he lost to Ryan Bader. But I think right now it's like him, DC, Fedor, Stipe. It's like this big – and Verdum, we can't forget about Verdum. He's been everywhere. It's this big four or five way for heavyweights. Randy Couture obviously is up there, but – Where do you sit? Who do you think is the greatest heavyweight of all time? Because, like, this would be, if you fought, you would be a heavyweight, obviously. I don't think you're cutting down 205 pounds.
No, I don't think dropping 70 pounds is possible right now.
So, in my mind, I think right now it's still Fedor if Cain can come back. Or it's Fedor or Stipe in mind. Stipe does have the record for most consecutive title defenses in UFC history. Knocked out JDS, knocked out Alistair Overeem, which is very bizarre to me. Who do you think is the greatest heavyweight of all time?
It'd be hard to not say Fedor. I think if Fedor had retired a few years ago, I think we've seen him take a few losses over the last few years. It kind of starts to deteriorate the conversation. I don't know. It's so hard to say because I think I'm intrigued too. If DC and Cain were never teammates and DC stayed a heavyweight, maybe he's clearly, you know, the GOAT at heavyweight as well. So there's just so many options, man. It's hard to really pick one. If forced to pick one, I'd say Fedor.
I agree. And I actually spoke with Justin Buckles when he was here cornering Cynthia Calvillo, and I asked him that very question. He said Fedor by default or Cain, but he thinks Daniel Cormier, if he gets through Stipe, it's hard to argue. I mean, he's never lost a heavyweight. I think if he wasn't teammates, like you said, he would be a heavyweight all the time. I think we'd have DC longer because he wouldn't have had to make that cut to 205 so often. So I think DC's the most talented heavyweight ever. But in terms of legacy, I'd probably say Fedor.
I agree.
So, but moving on from our friend SJY, Trash Talk. Does the audience perceive trash talk differently in WWE than MMA? So you obviously speak a lot in your world. You're on the mic in front of a live audience. Oftentimes you're in front of, 70,000 people at WrestleMania. What is the difference, I guess? Can you tell when a fighter is being phony? Like, if you think Colby Covington's putting on an act, but then you get Jorge Masvidal, and what you see is what you get with him. That is how he is all of the time. So what do you prefer, and what do you think sells fights?
I think when it feels most genuine, I feel like people gravitate towards it more. I know like Colby's really getting people talking, but I feel like even his post fight stuff and the cringy Matt Hughes comment, I feel like Stip doesn't really get people's attention as much as Jorge's three pieces in a soda comment or his post aspirin comments because. It just draws you in when it feels like, no, that's not a character. That's how he really feels. And, like, I believe every word Jorge says. Colby, I don't. And I really feel – and same thing, like, when Connor was talking, I believed every word. Yeah. I believed everything he said. And I feel like people gravitate towards that more. And I think, you know, Colby's done well for himself, and I think when he can tell it's a stick. And even, like, Chael was a great talker. But even then, like, it's like, oh, okay, he's really good at this gimmick. But I still think it's a gimmick. I still don't think it grabs people's attention as much as like a guy like Jorge or Connor when you believe every single thing that's coming out of their mouth.
So one name you didn't bring up, and I have to ask you about this. He calls himself the greatest combat sport athlete alive of all time. Henry Cejudo, the king of cringe, as people call him. What do you make of his thing? And I was speaking to him at UFC 238, and he said, well, this is an act, guys. Like, I'm not always like this. And, like, to me, I hate that. Like, if you're going to do the cringy thing, just stick with it all the time and don't try to pull the curtain back. Am I crazy on that?
No, I agree. Like, it's keeping kayfabe. That's what it is.
There you go. You
keep the gimmick going. Like, if you're going to commit to it, you commit to it. And it's one thing, like, let it down around your friends when you're home, whatever. But if this is your gimmick, do it. But in the same vein, I think this is obviously getting people talking more than if he did nothing. So I give him credit for trying something. But it's so clear, like pulling a fake snake. He's trying, and I commend him for that. But it is cringy, and it's very, you could see through it. But again, like, it's better than doing nothing.
And at the end of the day, he still went in and stopped Marlon Moraes, who I thought was the best bantamweight alive. I thought he was going to be the champion. I picked Marlon by stoppage, and Henry Cejudo did it with one leg and stopped Marlon Moraes, which was, I think, one of the most impressive things I've ever seen live at an event.
Yeah, I had Marlon winning that too. I was really surprised to see him pull through, especially that first round. Marlon looked really good, and then to see Cejudo do his thing was pretty incredible.
All right, and we're going to hop over to some Twitter questions. One specifically for you. Which MMA fighter, past or present, would be most suited for the New Day?
Ooh. I think it'd have to be someone who's kind of goofy, so I'd probably go with Johnny Walker.
Really?
Yeah, he's got that, just exudes charisma.
One of the tweets in response said, I would love to see Derek Lewis doing your hip things.
I'd be into that. I don't know if that's up his alley, but I'd be into it.
I think Derek Lewis is one of the bigger stars in the heavyweight division, just based on his demeanor and how he's one of those other guys. It's very much what you see is what you get. But moving on, another question from Twitter. I don't know if you saw Holly Holm's returning, rematching against Raquel Pennington on that big UFC 243 card down in Melbourne, 60,000 seat stadium. The exact stadium she was in when she knocked out Ronda Rousey, all those at UFC 193, I believe. What do you make of Holly Holm's last fight against Amanda Nunes? A lot of people, they seem to complain when she gets all these title fights, but I kind of group her in the group of Frankie Edgar, where when she gets a title fight, it makes sense just because of how she can beat anyone, but she kind of falters a lot when she's in these big title fights. So what did you think of her last performance against Amanda Nunes, the greatest female fighter of all time, and what do you make of her rematch against Raquel Pennington?
It's kind of a fight I didn't expect. As far as the Nunes fight, I just don't know if anyone is beating Amanda right now. Yeah. So I don't know if that's really a shot at Holly at all. And I think she's someone who probably beats everyone else in the top, you know, five easily, you know, top, you know, 2 to 15. But it's just Amanda is just, you know, she's in her own league right now. But I think that the Raquel Pennington fight is a nice opportunity for her to bounce back. I don't really know where she goes now. I think she's had, what, 3 title fights?
She's had a lot. She's lost to Amanda. She lost her belt to Misha Tate, and she lost to Cyborg. So she's come up. The people she's losing to aren't, like, pushovers. She's losing to the greatest female fighters ever.
Right.
Oh, and Jermaine Durandamy, the first featherweight title fight that people always forget about.
Controversial Durandamy's fight. Yeah. But, yeah, man, she's hard to root against, man. I'd like to, if she wants to keep fighting, I'd love to see her keep fighting. I just don't know if there's another path to a title at, you know, 135 or 145 anytime in the, you know, near future.
I agree. It's good, but she's one of those fighters. She wins 2 in a row, and they need a last minute filler. Because Amanda has talked about wanting to be a mom. If she doesn't want to fight anymore, I feel like Holly's going to be right there for another title fight. But we've had a lot of questions in the same vein on all platforms. Would Big E ever consider doing BJJ or MMA or anything like that? I know a few wrestlers do it a little on the side, but would you ever want an actual MMA fight?
Not a chance. I am an entertainer. I try to tell people that, like, I first of all, I'm 5'11", so I have no reach whatsoever.
Sure.
I wrestled my last time, like, doing any kind of martial art was, I was a high school wrestler and a state champion, but it's Florida as well, which doesn't really have the best pedigree for high school wrestling. Well, we had some good athletes, but this is when I was 17. I am now 33. There's no chance whatsoever. I think if anything, like, you know, when I think my wrestling days are over and I still want to do something, like, it would be kind of fun to maybe learn some, learn jiu-jitsu or do something like that to kind of stay active and have some fun. But beyond that, there is no way I want to have a career. I'd say my profession is tough, but I am not a tough guy. I really am not.
So. If you were, because I know Goldberg's said this, The Undertaker said this, and The Rock has said this, that if MMA was as big of a deal as it is now when they were coming up, they probably would have done MMA. What about you? If MMA was a high paying gig when you were, say, 17, winning the state championship, would you have even considered it back then?
Not really, honestly. Like, football was always my dream. That was kind of my plan. And I just had a bunch of injuries playing, you know, college football. And then, you know, trying to transition. And guys do it, but after 2 torn ACLs and a broken patella, a torn left pec, then trying to get into something like fighting, I don't see it. But, I mean, the thing is, our industry really, there's just a lot of, like, guys who come from these elite wrestling backgrounds or you know, whatever it is. So there's a lot of guys who I think are really capable. There's so many guys that we get now who were on the Olympics. Like, Chad Gable is a guy who was an Olympian. And we have so many guys like that, not quite that level, but guys who have a martial art background or who were legit at one point. But for me, that was, you know, kind of never really a real consideration.
Well, we got a question from our friend Abdel Riff. All right. According to Ali Abdelaziz, Frankie Edgar's manager, his next fight will most likely be at bantamweight. But my question is, who would you like to see him fight first? I think him and his son Sal would be a great test for Frank to see how good he is at bantamweight, because I still think that might be his best weight class. So, yes, I'm sure you watched UFC 240. Frankie Edgar came up short against Max Holloway. So I'll pose this twice. Do you think Frank Edgar should drop down to bantamweight? This would be his third weight class. He's one of those guys we talked about where I think he's getting a title shot no matter where he is. And what did you make of his fight against Max Holloway? A lot of people had Max just running away with it 50-45 across the board. But, yeah, Frank Edgar, your thoughts on the answer, future UFC Hall of Famer?
I guess if he can, you know, he's not the biggest, 45. But I always kind of wonder if guys, as they get older, if dropping down is a smart decision. But if it's something that he feels like he can handle, all for it. The Sun Tzu fight, I think, is a great fight.
I agree.
Sun Tzu is coming off a loss or two.
Yeah.
But it's still a very tough fight and something that would intrigue me as well. I had Max winning the fight pretty handily, but I thought the rounds were all fairly close.
Yeah, 100%.
It wasn't Colby and Lawler at all. It wasn't that dominant, like, oh, he's clearly winning every round. I didn't think it was that. But, you know, Max, just with his crisp boxing, his takedown defense, I feel like his people just kind of forget, like, he's just very hard to take down. I thought Max, like, clearly won the fight, but close rounds as well. But, yeah, man, I'd be intrigued to see Frankie at 135. I just don't know making that cut. You know, I still think he beats a lot of guys at 145 if he wants to.
I agree. I think 135, because Frankie did not cut any weight at all when he fought a lightweight. He cuts to 145. I think 135 pounds would be the first weight class that Frankie would actually feel the weight cut. Like, he would feel sucked out. But selfishly, I would like, there's a lot of, like, imagine Frankie Edgar versus Dominic Cruz. Like, that, the footwork in that fight alone would be something to behold. So there's a lot of fights I would love to see Frankie fight. But what are your thoughts on Max Holloway's run at featherweight? He did come up short to Dustin Poirier on that Atlanta card, which many consider one of the greatest title fights ever. But I think it was overshadowed by the co-main event between Israel Adesanya and Kelvin Gastelum, which blew me away. Is Max Holloway the greatest featherweight ever? Max Holloway doesn't like to call himself that, but I think right now it's between him and Aldo.
Yeah, it's because he Aldo twice, and interestingly, it's easy to put him in that category. But Aldo also had a ridiculous run at 145. I'd like to make this call like in another year or two, and not now. I'm also biased, man. I met Max. We had a show in Hawaii a few years ago, and he brought his son. And he was like the nicest, most down to earth guy. Yeah. We actually played UFC, and he actually beat me. Which is a little embarrassing because I love that game. to meet him, as soon as I met him and like hung out with him and his son, I just like, it's hard for me like to say a negative word at all about Max. So just based on, I got to say I'm biased. So I probably, if being forced, would have to put, you know, Max as the greatest right now. But I'd like to see, you know, the Volkanovski fight.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question.
If he can continue to like to clean out that division, but I don't think the Volkanovski fight is a give me at all. I think Volkanovski is very tough, and like a guy who can grind you, can, you know, strike well. I like that fight a lot, and I think it's a challenge. But I'd love to see, you know, even though it'd be kind of cool to see him hold the 55 title and the 45 title, which he tried to do with the Poirier fight, I'd love to see him just try to clean out the division. And there's guys like Zabit, who still, I don't think, in the top five yet.
He actually, that's another question. He's fighting Calvin Kattar in the co-main event at UFC Boston. And those two guys are both very young, and they're both rapidly ascending. Korean Zombie supposedly wants to fight Brian Ortega in a fight I've been asking for about 6 years now. And then Jeremy Stephens fighting Yair Rodriguez in the main event of that UFC Mexico City card. So there's no shortage of contenders at featherweight right now.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'd love to see just him stick at 45, and I know he's talked too about they sound ridiculous to me at like one day fighting at like light heavyweight, just kind of
He keeps calling out Daniel Cormier.
Which is like I think he just has that mentality of a guy who just wants to go take on any challenge, which I think really endears him to fans. But I honestly, selfishly, if he can continue to safely make the cut at 45. I'd love to just see him, like you said, there's just so many great matches at 45, and I'd love to see him just kind of you know, take on every challenge there is.
I think the only thing that will stop him from doing that is he does not have the easiest cut to 145. And I know Max hates when we bring that up, but I just think it's a reality. He fell out of that fight against Brian Ortega days before the fight, and he doesn't look great getting on scale, but he makes it every time. So if he can keep making it and doing it healthy, keep doing it. But if you watch the UFC 240 press conference, someone asked him, would you fight Volkanovski in Australia in October? He said, I've done 3 5-round title fights in 7 months. I want to go get my brain checked out before I even think about fighting in October. So he's doing the right things. He had his son up there who you thought, he goes, I have a son. I'm not fighting until my brain's 100% healthy.
Right. And I'm glad that he's taking that approach. And just to like some of the comments that he's made, just about like he just handles everything so well and graciously, and I think he's a great representative of the sport. Especially with what we know about CTE and that stuff, it's cool to see him like take a level-headed approach. Because as fans, we're like, yeah, I'd love to see the Volkanovski fight in Australia. That'd be incredible. But I'm glad he's looking out for himself and doing what's best for his family.
Well, we're coming up on a little bit of time, and obviously I could talk to you for hours about MMA, but I don't think people want to hear me talk about MMA. So there's a few big title fights coming up, so I'll just name them down for you. Your thoughts, you can give a prediction if you want, you don't have to. We talked about Daniel Cormier versus Stipe, and we talked about Nate Diaz versus Anthony Pettis, but Khabib versus Dustin Poirier in Abu Dhabi for the undisputed lightweight title. Khabib has said, this obviously isn't as big a fight as Conor, but he respects Dustin Poirier. Very drastic change of promotion from the last fight Khabib had with Conor McGregor with the bust throwing and everything. What do you think of that fight? You can give a prediction if you want. It's going to be in Abu Dhabi, so I consider this enemy territory for Dustin Poirier.
I agree as well. I feel like every fight Dustin goes into, people kind of sleep on him, and then you 100%. Watch him like, oh, that guy is incredible. And then he goes into the next fight, and he kind of do the same thing. But it's also Khabib, man, and I just don't know how you stop the relentless takedowns, the ground and pound. I think you'd have to give the edge to Khabib. And he's a guy who's never lost.
Never, like,
unblemished. So it's an incredible fight, though. And I'd love to see if Dustin can even, like, slow the takedowns at all. But, I'd go with Khabib there.
And I think our cameraman, Casey Lydon, said it the best when he was on the A side, is everyone keeps talking about, can Dustin Poirier stop the takedown? I don't think that's the question we have to ask. I think it's, can he stop the takedown and then stop another takedown and then stop another? Because you stop one, there's probably one coming right after. So he has to do what no one has ever done in his life, and that's to beat Khabib Nurmagomedov. But Robert Whittaker and Israel Adesanya fighting on that Marvel Stadium down in Melbourne, that 60,000-seat stadium. Robert Whittaker hasn't fought since his win against Yoel Romero in Chicago, and I think beating Yoel Romero is the most impressive thing a middleweight could do, and Robert Whittaker has done it twice, and I don't think his body is ever going to be the same after those fights, because those two were wars, and we saw what, like, I think Luke Rockhold said kicking Yoel Romero is like kicking a fire hydrant. Like, it hurts you when you kick him. Like, you can land a kick to his ribs and it hurts your foot. So he beat him twice, but Israel Adesanya looked uber impressive. That win against Kelvin Gastelum blew me away. What are your thoughts on that fight?
Oh, man, it's an incredible fight. I love Israel as a personality and as a fighter, and I think he brings, so as a fan, I love watching him speak. I love watching him fight. I love what he brings. If forced to pick, Whitaker's just, like you said, just so tough. His chin is incredible. I feel like he'll have the edge as far as power. It's a great fight, and it's cool. Like, I love that they're doing it in Australia. Sometimes we'll see missteps with fights like that where it's clear it should be in Australia, and for some reason we're doing it elsewhere. But I'm glad that fight is being made there. If forced to pick one, I'd go with Bobby Knuckles. Also, I don't know why he doesn't lean into that nickname. It's an incredible nickname.
I agree. Yeah, well, he said that he doesn't, like, he lives on the other side of the world, and, like, sometimes fans talking, he just doesn't hear. So he came to America, and he's like, what is Bobby Knuckles? Like, where did this come from?
It's great. I love it. But I love that fight as well, man. And that's a huge fight and one I'm really excited for.
Yeah, I can't pick that one yet. I like it. Israel Adesanya, this is the longest time he's had off between fights in the UFC. Like, he fought in November, And then he goes, I think I'm going to go on vacation. And then he fought in February against Anderson Silva. And then he's like, I think I'm going to go on vacation. And then he fought Kelvin Gastelum in Atlanta in like April. So this is the longest we've seen without – this is the longest we've been without Israel Adesanya. If he's coming in with no like nicks or bangs or anything, I don't – I favor the more active fight. I mean, he's fought like five or six times since Robert Whittaker's last fight. So – but – I didn't think Robert Whittaker was going to be Jacare. I didn't think he was going to be Yoel Romero the first time. He's one of those, like you said, Dustin Poirier, every fight he's in, I think people kind of overlook him. But so I think that's a coin flip for me right now.
Right. I agree, man.
And then one final one. There is a title fight this weekend that no one asks about. Valentina Shevchenko is rematching Liz Carmouche for the women's flyweight title. The last time we saw Valentina Shevchenko, she was sending Jessica Eye into the ether with a head kick. What do you make of that fight? And does anyone in the women's flyweight division pose a threat for Valentina Shevchenko?
No. I guess Liz Carmouche, I believe, has won over Valentina.
Yep.
But that was also eons
ago. That was a very long time ago.
It was a very strange fight. I didn't expect it to be made. And I guess 125 also is not the deepest division.
Nope.
So I'm not even entirely sure. I think Tatiana is out with an injury, maybe.
Tatiana is at strawweight right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Forgive me. I'm trying to think of who else is at 25.
There's Roxanne. There's Jennifer Mai is in that one. Sajara Eubanks, I think, jumped up to 120. Or no, she's at 135 now. So, yeah, 125 is not the deepest. Okay. I mean, I think Callan Chukagian's another one, JoJo Calderwood. Like, I think right now it's in that similar to when Ronda rose up. Like, you get two wins in a row and all of a sudden you're fighting for a title.
Right. I just don't it's an odd fight, but I guess when you kind of run down who else is at 125, you know, who else are you going to make? The thing that intrigues me, I know they fought before, but I would love to see Amanda and Valentina again.
You're telling me.
But it honestly feels like if Valentina decides to stay at 125, that feels like a division that she'll own as long as she wants to. And like decisively. She's just so technical with power. She does everything. I don't see this one, the Liz Carmouche fight, being close.
I think the only thing is Lauren Murphy spoke with Dennis Segura on our site, because she just won at UFC Newark, is that Liz Carmouche is the strongest female fighter she's ever experienced in her life. She came damn near close to beating Ronda Rousey in that debut when she had that backpack rear naked choke in before she got not bit on purpose, but it was like over the mouthpiece. It was more of a pain choke rather than a submission, but she came damn near close to becoming the women's bantamweight champion in her UFC debut. She's one of those fighters I think that could be anyone, and I am very intrigued by that fight. Co-main event though, Vicente Luque and Mike Perry. Mike Perry doesn't really like me, but I and our former coworker Sean Alshadi thinks Vicente Luque is the most underrated fighter on the entire UFC roster. Do you have any thoughts on that? I think that is a barn burner of a welterweight fight.
Yeah, I agree. That Luque Barbarina fight was incredible.
Oh, God. That was unbelievable.
I'm all in. And Mike Perry's one of those guys who's going to want to brawl. Yeah. I know when he spent some time in Albuquerque, I think he kind of got him to, I think, settle down a little bit and be a little bit more technical. But I feel like that'll be a barn burner. I think it's a great.
I believe he's back in Florida now, training with like Jacare Souza and everyone. So I think he did a couple of camps with Albuquerque, and then he went back. So, but I kind of like seeing fighters bounce around. Kind of, Overeem has famously done that. He changes camp like everything because he's trying to accrue all of these skills. So I slightly favor Luque in this fight, though.
Agree.
Well, we're pretty much out of time, and you know how the A-side works. You get to talk, say whatever you want to the fans at the end. I know you guys have a big pay-per-view coming up on Sunday. So, Biggie, I think you've done one of these before, but the promo is yours, my man.
Yes. It's pretty much my PR guy would kill me if I did not plug SummerSlam. But SummerSlam is coming up this Sunday in Toronto. It's going to be an incredible show. The Scotiabank Arena, I believe. But it will be incredible. Make sure to come out. My childhood idol Goldberg will be in action. That's pretty incredible.
Former, I believe, Elite XC MMA commentator Bill Goldberg.
MMA plug. I like it. Also, my man Kofi Kingston will be in action against Randy Orton, defending his WWE Championship. That will be incredible. Make sure to watch that. And it's the biggest show of the summer. So make sure to watch SummerSlam. Yeah, that's it. I got to make sure to plug SummerSlam, and they would kill me. It's on the WWE Network, which you can accrue right now. You can acquire it for only, I believe it's still $9.99 a month. Get the WWE Network. It's incredible. What a great library. We have original programming. We have shows like 205 Live with so much great wrestling. We also have the old collections from ECW and WCW. Make sure to buy the WWE Network, please, so that all the people that pay me will be pleased with me and will allow me to do more of these things. So there's my plug for WWE SummerSlam. It's coming up this Sunday, Toronto. Watch it.
And former UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar, I believe, is putting his Universal title on the line against, the captain, Seth Rollins?
The captain, yes, of course. I could not get that.
So big SummerSlam coming up. And for my plug, I just want to say UFC Uruguay is low-key an unbelievable card. I mean, Demetrius Johnson was one of those dominant champions that was so dominant, I think a lot of people thought he was a little boring. And they almost got rid of a division because he was too dominant. And I think we're in the makings of seeing that with Valentina Shevchenko. I think she's really going to be one of the more – she's going to have a long title reign in my mind. And it's always fun to see the genesis of these title reigns. So that's my plug. Watch UFC Uruguay because it's low-key, unbelievable. But for Jose, that's one-third of the WWE SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Big E, anytime you want to come on, I'm always down to talk MMA with you. I think our audience – I was scrolling through the comments, and they're like, I can't believe Big E watched – Vicente Luque and Brian Barberena fight. So I think you caught people off guard with your MMA knowledge for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how much I actually know, but I watch pretty much every card. I love it. And thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. I don't know why anyone wants to hear me talk about MMA, but I love doing it. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. And with that, we'll be back next Wednesday. I'll be in Anaheim for UFC 241. I don't know who my co-host is going to be, but you can stick around on our site and all that fun stuff. Hopefully, we get some fun Nate Diaz sound clips for you guys. But for Jose, that's Biggie.